Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, June 9th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemire.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Former Energy Minister and deposed ZANU-PF Provincial Chairman for Harare, Amos Midzi, who has been linked to a faction of the party said to be led by former Vice President Joyce Mujuru, has been found dead in a vehicle at his farm.
Without taking much of your time, I would refer you to the police spokesperson. I would not comment on anything other than if the police report comes.
A High Court judge has issued a provisional order directing the Gweru City Council to stop cutting off water supplies to some residents over outstanding council bills.
And Zimbabwe has lifted the 2011 ban on chrome ore exports after realizing that the country is sitting on 900 million tons of the lucrative mineral.
With the lifting of the ban, government will facilitate the export of all the encumbered chrome ore to the beneficiary importers.
A former energy minister and deposed ZANU-PF provincial chairman for Harare province, Amos Midzi, who has been linked to a faction of the party said to be led by former Vice President Joyce Mujuru, was on Tuesday morning found dead in a vehicle at his farm. According to state-controlled and independent newspapers, Midzi, who is a former ambassador, died at his Marirangwe farm in Beatrice, a few kilometers outside Harare. A police spokesperson, a senior assistant commissioner, Cherit Charamba, declined to comment, saying she was in a meeting. Family member Cornelius Bwanya tells Studio 7 they are devastated by Midzi's death.
Without taking much of your time, Mika, I would refer you to the police spokesperson. From there, I have poor information and policy by way of police report. But all I can advise you at the moment, I would not comment on anything other than if the police report comes, and then we'll comment.
That was Cornelius Bwanya, a family member of the late Amos Midzi, speaking with Studio 7. A political commentator Nkulule Goswanda tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube there are indications that Midzi is a victim of ZANU-PF factionalism.
What we want to know is what has led to this situation, if it happened without ZANU-PF's involvement, and if it happened with ZANU-PF's involvement, why did they have to do it this way? What has gone so wrong?
So now, in your own opinion, really, do you think that maybe ZANU-PF has got a hand here?
Well, we know that ZANU-PF has a history of eliminating its internal enemies using spurious and strange car accidents and so forth, including, you know, the death of the late General Mujuru, which involved a fire. So you have to, ZANU-PF has a history of stage managing accidents, if you like, and has not had that approach where they have to have people looking as though they've committed suicide or even forcing them to commit suicide, because that's the other side of the story. It may be that they had something huge on him and they said, well, we either take you out or you take yourself out. I think that it is highly possible, and because things are becoming very tricky and out of control for ZANU-PF, I think asking people or having people look like they committed suicide becomes the next best method other than the accidents, which a lot of people now believe to be pretty obvious, given that some of the ministers that some of the people who are no longer in government include former intelligence ministers who know exactly what has to be done. I think this will be a new method that can be used to take out even former intelligence ministers.
That was political commentator Nkulule Goswanda speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Huddersfield University in London. But ZANU-PF activist and political commentator Maurice Ngwenya says such thinking is far-fetched.
It is very important that we wait for police investigations to take place so that we really understand what happened. But the death of any person, according to African culture, is a sad thing that needs to be respected.
There are these people who are actually claiming that somehow maybe ZANU-PF has got a hand in it. What can you say to some critics saying that kind of thing?
Well, those are very uncouth and uncultured and civilized people who want to raise such funny stories when someone has just pass away like today. So I think we need to really respect the next of kin, those who are close to the person, to mourn that person instead of trying to fuel and start pointing fingers and raise speculations or come up with theories. Like I said, according to the African culture, death is a very sorrowful thing that needs to be respected, and such, it's very bad to be talking about what has caused the death of that person beyond what the police are saying. So I think those are an African people who are talking about all those theories at this moment.
That was ZANU-PF activist and political commentator Morris Ngwenya speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. The late Midzi and other several senior ZANU-PF officials were accused in the run-up to the party's elective congress last December to have allegedly hatched a plan to topple 91-year-old President Robert Mugabe.
A High Court judge has issued a provisional order directing the Gweru City Council to stop cutting off water supplies to some residents over outstanding council bills. In an urgent court application filed in Bulawayo by 25 local residents whose water supplies were cut off recently, Justice Martin Makonese said the council should also ensure that it immediately restores water supplies to all houses. The resident's attorney, Reginald Chidawanyika, said the council can appeal against this ruling, though it should first reconnect water supplies to these households before making any legal moves. Gweru Mayor Hamutendi Kombai and Town Clerk Daniel Matau were not reachable for comment.
The Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries, or CZI, says for industries to break even, they must operate at above 60% of capacity. This comes amid reports that capacity utilization in the manufacturing sector has recorded a 1.9% increase to 39%, up from the 2014 figure of 37.1% in the period under review. The collapse of the manufacturing sector has resulted in thousands of people being retrenched, pushing close to 5.5 million into the informal sector. CZI President Busisa Moyo tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the increase is minimal, but is a step in the right direction.
Well, we are happy that it's moving in the right direction. Remember that it is an average, and an average needs to be understood that there are some companies that are higher than 39%, but there are some that are lower than 39%. But I think it's a move in the right direction. But we must understand that we are coming off a very low base, and that needs to be borne in mind in analyzing the capacity utilization. 39% is still very low. We cannot celebrate this milestone. Whilst we are happy with the direction, it's the right direction, it's better than going down. However, for companies to break even, most companies break even at between 62 and 68%. That's roughly where companies start to make money, and issues of viability, sustainability, future earnings start to kick in.
What are some of the problems that are preventing you from reaching maximum capacity?
There's a myriad of problems that business in Zimbabwe is facing right now, which need to be dealt with, and which we as CZI are engaging our colleagues in government to say, can we look at this and can we address some of these issues? In particular, policy, the policy environment, which sounds like a broken record, and people will say, no, you said policy, but it means that the issues that we've been raising all along have not been solved, and so we cannot maybe keep silent about them. Businesses are faced with a lot of costs, and there's no reprieve. Instead, we see more costs being added to business, especially formal sector. We find that, the fines, the penalties, and so on, they become intense, and this makes it very difficult. The permit system for companies to operate, even for imports and sometimes for exports, you find it's it's very difficult for companies to operate, and so this hampers the ability of companies to expand.
That was CZI President Busisa Moyo speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu.
Meanwhile, Zimbabwe has lifted a 2011 ban on chrome ore exports after realizing that the country is sitting on 900 million tons of chrome, prejudicing the country of millions of dollars in potential revenue, while nations like South Africa are reaping huge benefits from this mineral. Mines Minister Walter Chidagwa told journalists in Harare today that cabinet made this decision to boost the country's ailing economy while benefiting from lucrative chrome sales.
With the lifting of the ban, government will facilitate the export of all the encumbered chrome ore to the beneficiary importers. In lifting the ban on the export of chrome ore, government has taken into account the following key considerations: available chrome ore production capacity, which is estimated at 1.5 million metric tons per year, limited smelting capacity of 455,200 metric tons per year, available rail transportation capacity at National Railways of Zimbabwe to port estimated at over 1 million metric tons per year.
That was Mines Minister Walter Chidagwa speaking to journalists in Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
microfinance loans emptying pockets of Zimbabweans.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
An Egyptian court sentenced 11 people to death Tuesday in connection with the 2012 riot at a soccer stadium in the northern city of Port Said that left 74 people dead and injured hundreds more.
Burundi's Electoral Commission has recommended pushing back national elections after unrest sparked by President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision to seek a third term.
U.S. President Barack Obama stressed the need to more quickly train Iraqi troops in order to succeed in fighting against Islamic State fighters, saying Monday that Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi agrees on the desire for more security forces who are trained, fresh, well-equipped and focused. Mr. Obama told the Iraqi leader that there's also need to stop the flow of foreign fighters, saying thousands of militants are still going into Syria and onto Iraq.
Not all of that is preventable, but a lot of it is preventable. If we've got better cooperation, better coordination, better intelligence, if we are monitoring what's happening at the Turkish-Syria border more effectively, this is an area where we've been seeking deeper cooperation with Turkish authorities who recognize it's a problem, but haven't fully ramped up.
Mr. Obama said the Pentagon is working on plans to boost the recruitment of Iraqi soldiers, particularly from Sunni tribes.
A white police officer, Eric Casbolt, in the southeastern U.S. state of Texas, has been placed on leave after he was seen on video pulling his gun on a group of black teenagers and wrestling one of them to the ground in the latest incident involving possible racial bias towards African Americans.
And at the same time, a South Carolina grand jury has indicted a white former police officer who shot and killed an unarmed black man fleeing after a traffic stop.
Thousands of Zimbabweans currently struggling to make ends meet due to the prevailing harsh economic environment in the country have resorted to getting loans from microfinance institutions and so-called money sharks in order to supplement their meager income. In some cases, loan recipients are getting a raw deal as high interest rates end up emptying their pockets. Our correspondent Taurai Shava reports from the Midlands capital, Gweru.
A 37-year-old civil servant who only wants to be identified as Moyo earns $370 per month. He says this is not enough to buy food, clothes, pay fees for his children, and cater for other basic necessities. At the end of last year, he decided to get a $500 loan from a microfinance company to pay tuition fees for his child who was supposed to enroll for Form 1 studies.
With a certain period of time until April that I had to must have finished paying the loan that I had got from the microfinance. And indeed, when we got to April, they stopped taking money from me. But I was shocked recently when I went to the bank and discovered that they'd resumed taking money from me. I then approached them, trying to find out where the problem could have been, and they indicated that the initial agreement of the interest percentage that I was supposed to get was too low. Hence, they had revised and were going to continue getting money from me so that they are able to get their money.
Moya is not alone in this predicament, as a single mother and parastatal worker, Ruth Banda, recently got a loan of $400 from a money lending institution after spending 3 months without getting a salary. Banda says she almost lost her valuable assets when she struggled to repay her loan.
So I was forced to go and look for money from money lenders. When I got there, they told me they need collateral of the property that I had at home. And so I was forced to give away my property to them for them to give me money. And when they gave me money, I staggered for about 2 or 3 months without paying them their money because I was facing challenges then. When I explained to them that I couldn't pay, they didn't understand. They were starting to threaten to sell my stuff. And I ran around until I got the money and paid them. That's when we settled our issue.
Large numbers of people in Gweru and across the country are facing similar problems as the economy has been declining fast following the 2013 general elections. Microfinance or money lending is not unique to Zimbabwe, and not all microfinance institutions operate without following national finance laws. Globally, microfinance companies cater for interests of small-scale businesses and individuals who hardly access capital from established banks. Executives at most of these institutions declined to talk to Studio 7, but one of the workers, who also refused to speak on tape in fear of being victimized, noted that they are having difficulties in recovering loans from most beneficiaries, including civil servants, that make the bulk of loan recipients. Local attorney Brian Dube says individuals looking for loans should approach most of these institutions with caution, as some of them are not properly registered.
Microfinance organizations are the microfinance houses registered in terms of the law, and they have a mandate to give small loans to individuals at designated rates. But the major problem is that their requirements are cumbersome. They would require proof of residence, proof of employment or earnings, and at times other securities which people do not have. And people then resort to the informal money lenders. Those are individuals with free money which they are not using, and they will be willing to lend you that money, but they usually enter into agreements which do not reflect that it is money lending.
The Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe oversees the registration and operations of microfinance institutions. Despite some strict laws governing the operations of these organizations, there are a lot of unregistered money sharks who charge high interest rates. In some cases, individuals run such operations from the comfort of their homes in what is commonly known as chimbazo. Dube says people who get loans from these individuals find it difficult to get some form of redress if they are cheated. Some observers, key players in the money market, and the Consumer Council of Zimbabwe say micro-lending institutions generally trap ordinary people in poverty cycles that are difficult to break. Martin Charumbira, Economics Department Chairperson at the Midland State University, speaking as an independent economic analyst, agrees that microcredit can have a negative impact on people, but it can also help create employment and boost incomes of the poor.
When you look at the loans that are advanced by microfinance institutions, they are accessible to even the informal sector and others that may not have formal employment. And so when those people get the funds through that route, they are not required to produce any collateral in most cases. And so it gives them an opportunity to get funds and then engage in businesses that will enable them to make the repayments. And on the other side, you find that registration of a microfinance institution requires only a minimum capital requirement of 25,000 compared to what a bank would require, which is a minimum of $100 million. And so once you register a microfinance institution, you actually would have created employment for yourself and also for a few others that would be under the organization that you would have created.
There appears to be a thin line between microfinance institutions and black money market or chimbazo dealers in Zimbabwe, as high interest rates dominate the local money market in a nation currently ravaged by poverty. Reporting for Studio 7 from Gweru, this is Taurai Shava.
The Electoral Court has ruled that the Urungwe West by-election must go on tomorrow despite an urgent application by independent candidate Themba Mliswa, who cited voter intimidation by suspected ZANU-PF supporters. However, the court ruled that the case should be heard in the High Court after the by-election. Urungwe West has been the epicenter of alleged intimidation and violence more than the other nine by-elections. We reached Mliswa, who says he is happy that the Electoral Court has ruled against the three respondents, ZEC Chairperson Justice Rita Makarau, ZANU-PF, and Local Government Minister Ignatius Chombo, who were arguing that the matter should not be heard by the Electoral Court.
It was actually a success in that it was the first that a High Court judge has ruled that it has the jurisdiction to hear the matter. The thing respondents were arguing that the jurisdiction was not proper. In a way, it has set a precedent that you can take a matter High Court and it can be heard in terms of electoral processes of the country.
But meanwhile, the by-election goes on?
Yes, it's going to go on tomorrow. Like I said, the matter will be put on the High Court roll. We didn't seek to stop the elections at all. It was just to suspend, if not to get those leaders.
Meanwhile, can you tell us what is going on the ground?
Yes, unfortunately, I thought that ZANU-PF would behave itself, but it has realized that they don't have much success of winning. As such, they've resorted to violence. It was intimidation, not violence. They thought that by giving people rice and fixing the roads and doing the bridges, drilling the boreholes, they'd scored. But it is a right for the people to get all that. Every government must ensure that its people has enough to eat in terms of food security. And if there's not enough food in the country,
That was Urungwe West independent candidate Themba Mliswa. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Urungwe. We also reached another independent candidate, Albert Mhlanga, who says the whole cabinet descended on his constituency last week in a last-ditch effort to wrest the five Bulawayo seats from the independents.
In Bulawayo, all along, there was no violence, no intimidation. From this week, when Dr. Chombo transferred the violence from Urungwe to Pumula, what is surprising, as the whole cabinet ministers have been in Pumula here to campaign for the first time, all the two vice presidents have been here, only in the exception of the actual president, President Robert Mugabe, who is actually frog-frying. Otherwise, I'm sure if he had a chance also to be in Zimbabwe, he was going to be in Pumula. Otherwise, everything is going smoothly.
As we understand that you, as an independent, has met other independents and formed some kind of coalition. Can you tell us more about that?
To be honest, I'm a senior politician. It's only independent legality, but I'm not independent in my mind. Like, you know, what caused us to be out of parliament is that we had a vision of actually getting all parties forming a coalition, all political opposition parties, and getting one presidential opposition leader. And we, as a coalition, we've identified Dr. Joyce Mjuru to form a coalition with all progressive leaders which are known. We've got the Tsvangirai, we've got Welshman, we've got Dumiso Tarekwa, and all other this forward to form one coalition party and actually contest Robert Mugabe in 2018.
That was Albert Mhlanga, an independent candidate in tomorrow's by-election. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Bulawayo.
Meanwhile, some voters in Harare say Zimbabwe's forthcoming parliamentary by-elections set for tomorrow should not only be used to test ZANU-PF's support in urban areas, but to also usher in a new development plan for the capital city. Our correspondent Thomas Chiripasi has more details.
Many ZANU-PF supporters, like Colin Gadzamoyo of Glenview South, say the by-elections are a foregone conclusion as ZANU-PF will win against small party contestants and independent candidates because the ruling party's nemesis, the Opposition Movement for Democratic Change, is boycotting the polls.
I think we're going to win because we've been winners for a long time. Since we're in power, we're still winners and we'll be winners, and we are winners.
But Harare East registered voter Kudzai Sioka says this is not all about just romping to victory.
In the past, we haven't seen nothing much. For these guys who are coming in, we know there's Terence Mukupe from ZANU-PF, but we don't know what exactly he does. We just know he's a banker. His potentials, we would lie, we don't know much about him. But we need change in this area. We need to see developments, projects, like we need boreholes. At times there's no water most of the time here. We need roads to be repaired. We need many things here.
All MDC formations are boycotting the parliamentary by-elections as they are calling for electoral reforms before participating in any poll in the country. They claim that even the 2013 general elections were rigged in favor of President Robert Mugabe and his ZANU-PF party. Mr. Mugabe's party has dismissed these allegations as far-fetched, labeling the MDC formation's Stooges of the West. Kuwadzana-based MDCT supporter Mishek Mutero says ZANU-PF's victory will be insignificant.
How do you win in a race that you are running alone? It does not happen. The parties that are contesting that election do not have the broad representations from the people. And I'm also not sure if this will give ZANU-PF any legitimacy, because the victory for me is Pyrrhic. It doesn't make sense. As long as the MDCT is not there, which commands the majority of Zimbabweans, then that result for me is null and void.
The opposition transformed Zimbabwe's candidate for Highfield West, Kudakwashe Makuwe, has been feeling the heat in the run-up to the polls. He claims that the ruling party has been terrorizing his supporters.
The ZANU-PF guys, they've been moving around tearing our posters. We had initially put our posters in the whole constituency, actually, of Highfield West, but at the moment, there is not a single poster that is now there. Others, they've torn them apart, and others, they've defaced them, and others, they've put their posters on top of ours.
ZANU-PF's Deputy Director of Information, Psychology Maziwisa, who is also contesting the Highfield West seat, says these allegations are frivolous.
What violence are they talking about? There is no violence that has happened. Let them say whatever they want to say. Are they mad?
Maziwisa could not be drawn to comment further, saying he was putting the last touches to his campaign ahead of polls tomorrow. While ZANU-PF is approaching these polls with verve, political analyst Dumisani Nkomo of a non-profit organization, Habakuk Trust, believes that the ruling party is using the by-elections to settle its internal fights.
I think now there is an attempt by one faction or the other to totally eliminate the Mujuru faction, because there would have been a possibility, if it had remained within the party, of it coalescing with another faction within the Mnangagwa faction. Because I also think that the Mnangagwa faction has been split into two factions already. So a third faction was going to be a kingmaker. So it needed to be totally decimated and eliminated.
Nkomo says, despite having a majority in parliament, the by-elections are also important in the battle to succeed 91-year-old President Mugabe.
Thanks, Thomas Chiripasi. Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts of the Youth Connection will be talking with experts and listeners about the role of youths in Zimbabwe's political parties.
Now to recap today's top stories.
Former energy minister and deposed ZANU-PF provincial chairman for Harare, Amos Mitzi, has been found dead in a vehicle at his farm.
A High Court judge has issued a provisional order directing the Gweru City Council to stop cutting off water supplies to some residents over outstanding council bills.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Chris Gande in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.